the director of the Scowcroft Institute, and I would like to introduce our friend whose film we are watching this evening. He will answer Q's and A's, questions and A's, after the film is shown, but he'll make a couple of remarks. But let me introduce him. We have our dean here, Ryan Crocker. Thank you, Ryan, for being here. Just a personal note, I met John Rosbiani 12 years ago, yes, when the U.S. troops were sent in. I was the head of USAID, and we funded one of his films on the crimes of Saddam Hussein when I think 80 mass graves were discovered with thousands of skeletal remains in them by USAID staff, our embassy staff, and the civil affairs officers from the U.S. military. Were the local people were telling us where they were, and we excavated them jointly with them. And then Jano did a very moving and very disturbing film that was showed widely around the world in art theaters, and I'm glad he did it, because there's a lot of illusions about who Saddam was, regardless of your view of the war itself. A self-taught Kurdish-American avant-garde filmmaker, Jano Rosbiani was born in a village near the Tigris River, and he joined the Kurdish Revolution of 1974 at age 14 against the Iraqi regime, and subsequently received political asylum in the United States 2 years later when he was 16. I think you didn't tell quite the truth as to how old you were. That's but he is an American citizen, so he's one of us. He acquired his knowledge of filmmaking during his college years at Nova in the mid-80s while managing movie theaters and making experimental videos. He's a winner of numerous international awards, has been listed in the top 35 world filmmakers in the book Filmmakers of the Shadow by a Belgian author. He made his film debut in 1995 with a film called The Dance of the Pendulum in the United States. The movie we're about to see has gotten very high reviews by a number of critics, and I'm not going to talk about it because he will, but I just want to say Jano is not just the greatest Kurdish filmmaker, and there are 40, 50 million, 60 million Kurds, depending on the estimates, but he is also one of the leading human rights activists, and that's how I met him and how we've worked together over the years. We are honored to have him here today. Jano, would you like to introduce the movie? What? What's the matter? What? Well, he's going to just... Oh, turn off any cell phones you have, please.
Thank you very much. And thank you for expanding on me, and I appreciate it. And I thank you, Mr. Natsios. I thank the Bush School of Government and Public Service for this invitation, this screening. The film you're about to see, well, let me say, you know, being where we are in this very spot, in this earth, and that is the Bush School of Government and Public Service, you perhaps expect to see a politically charged film, or a film about the tragedies, atrocities that are befallen upon the Kurds. That this film is none of those. This film is more of a cross-cultural road film that takes you through the countryside of Kurdistan, and through that shows all the elements and the lives of the people, some of whom are still suffering from certain effects of the past, being the chemical attacks and being the villages being destroyed, and others are celebrating life. And this is shown through the eyes of a couple NYU students. So I was hoping there would be more students here in addition to the faculty, and because this is really, this film was more geared towards that generation. Nonetheless, I'm certain you will enjoy the film, and I'll be happy to answer any questions afterwards. Thank you. This was supposed to be up here. I don't know why my name was thrown up there. But nonetheless, we'll get rid of that.
Questions now. And about the movie, or if you wish to talk about the ask questions about the current situation, which is happening right now. Yazidi women are being auctioned off now, as Christian women are as well in Syria by ISIS. So the same thing that happened and the movie is happening now. Anyway.
You saw the film. I hope you liked it and enjoyed it, and hope you like Kurdistan. Maybe one day you can take a tour. Now there's a tourist company actually here in the United States that are taking groups to see Kurdistan. In the wintertime, they can actually ski, and in the place where they were stationed, in that hotel, actually they even have a recreation roller coasters going down the canyon. It's a sort of like Grand Canyon and going all the way down to the bottom and up. So they have many activities. The area gets filled with tourists from south of Iraq and from the Gulf countries, especially in the Gulf countries where they don't have such places, mountains. So it gets very, very crowded. We shot this film in August, and the middle of the summer, and we had one major issue that we were not able to shoot in many places because of the tourists, and especially Arab tourists with their Arab clothes, and we did not want to show that in the movie because that wasn't part of the story. But we got by with a few places that we can eventually shoot, but unfortunately we missed most of the tourist areas that were really, especially the waterfalls and other beautiful places. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Please. Can you bring this light down just a little bit? It's just, I can't see anything, and it's like being in the California sun, but I'm not getting a tan even from it. the various artists, they do have their CDs, I believe, on Amazon. I've had other people ask for a soundtrack, and we're working on actually getting a soundtrack of the movie out. But I'll be happy to give you the list of the artists, and you can go to their CDs, to Amazon, and find their work. Thank you. Today it was actually a very, a historically important day for the Kurds, because today was the day where they liberated Kobani in Rojava, that's the Kurdish region of Syria, after I believe 133 days of war against the jihadist ISIS. So today was completely liberated, and Kurds are celebrating all over the world, and especially along the border with Turkey, thousands of Kurds created a human chain holding hands across celebrating this event, and also to pay their respect for the people that were killed during the fight against the jihadists. So today's probably would be marked in the Kurdish calendar as one of the days to commemorate every year. You saw one of the scenes in Lalish. Lalish is sort of the Mecca of the Yazidis, where there are temples, and Yazidis from all over the world come there. Yazidis are the original, that was the original Kurdish faith that goes back to 4,000, 5,000 years, and they subscribed to the Mitraic sun god back then, and the seven angels, and later on, the Islam considered that the main angel was, and their version is Lucifer, and the Yazidi version is a peacock, and therefore they revere the peacock as the God's preferred angel. But has been dubbed peacock by the Islam. The peacock is actually Satan, and therefore Yazidis are infidels, and that accounts for what is happening to the Yazidis now, where they have been massacred. This has been their 74th massacre since the 7th century. And so they've been killing them and taking their women. It's just another, it's an Anfal, the Anfal that was done to the Kurds back in the middle 80s. It's been repeated again now. And as we speak now, over 2,000 Yazidi women are still missing. They've been auctioned, they've been sold, and sold back and forth, and among the jihadist people. So the Yazidi is the original Kurdish faith, pre-Zoroastrian. It was only 500 BC that Zoroaster came, just about around the time when Buddha also came to eventualize. And Zoroaster came with the concept of that there is a God bigger than the sun, and that is a spiritual God that's bigger than all of us, a creator of all of us, including the sun. And it was accepted by the majority of them that Kurds became Zoroastrians, except for, I would say, a good 20 to 30% that stayed, stuck to their old faith of Yazidism, and they survived until now, even though they've incorporated aspects of Zoroastrianism, Judaism, and Christianity into their religion, and even Islam into their religion. So it's not the pure Yazidism of 4,000 years ago or 2,500 years ago. They are about a total of maybe less than a million worldwide. The majority of them escaped the Kurdistan proper during the collapse, after the collapse of the Ottoman and during the Armenian genocide, where thousands, tens of thousands of Yazidis were also massacred as part of that genocide. So the survivors, the ones who have survived, are the ones who escaped, went to outside of the what became Turkey proper. And so we have large Yazidi communities now in Georgia and Armenia and Russia. And then in Kurdistan of Iraq and Kurdistan of Syria are really where their concentration is, and where they, as I mentioned, Lalish, you saw in the film, where their holy place is. The word Yazidi comes from the word Yazdan, which is the Kurdish word for God. So they consider themselves the true people of God, and that's why their color is white, as opposed to the I'm not here being prejudiced or anything, but the Islamic color is the black flag. The Yazidi is a white flag, and the white dress, as opposed to the black dress with the Islamics. So that's just the white and the dark, they revere light too much, to the point where in their temple, just like the Zoroastrian temple, there is an eternal fire that must never die. So they, what they do, they take olive oil. Everybody that goes takes their share of olive oil to put there and to continue to have the fire continuous. And every Wednesday, they burn 365 candles across the temple. That signifies the 365 days that the sun comes out to visit us. And so they have some very interesting, and their temple is shaped as a character mission, as you saw the temple. The shape of the sun rays, it comes from their faith of, original faith of having the sun as their god. Yes. Many of the traditional folk songs that date back to hundreds of years, perhaps even thousands, have the Romans and the Greeks in them, because of the time when the Romans invaded, the Greeks invaded, and you know, you've heard of Troy, you've heard of many other, Alexander went through it, when even had a war with the Persians. So many of the, actually every time apparently a big battle or there was a victory, songs were made, and some of these songs have come down the generations orally. And so many of these, this was a folk song he was singing, and my Roman beauty, it's still considered some. If a woman is very beautiful, they call her, oh, that's my Roman beauty. Please. Okay, after them. Do they remain the same? Oh. Yes, yes. Those are, we went into the mountains, ISIS. Only the areas we went to are the triangle, where the Kurds actually call it the Bermuda Triangle, which is Mount Kandil, where the Kurdish freedom fighters from the north, that is from Turkey, the PKK, are based. And there are still a lot of landmines, and at the time, we shot this in 2009, I did not finish it until last year because of the funding situation, but when we shot it, there were aerial attacks almost on a daily basis, not only by Turkey, but also by Iran, chasing its own Kurdish freedom fighters. But the rest of Kurdistan, actually now, as we speak, in the Kurdistan section of Iraq, only 5% is left under the ISIS. The rest is liberated. And I think the next few days, the Kurds are now, they always were on the defensive just to protect the Kurdish land, but now they're on the offensive to just completely clear them out. Mr. Crocker. The Kurds often make this complaint that Kurds have often been used by one side or the other against each other. And so there have been mercenaries. Turkey have used, as we speak actually now, for example, Iran would support the Kurds of Iraq against Iraq. Iraq would support the Kurds of Turkey against Turkey, and so on and so forth. And that's what she refers to. That's what many Kurds complain, that, you know, we are our own enemies. And if we stop doing this and stop being used by the enemies, then we will not be our own enemies. And that's where, you know, it's a Kurdish saying, we are one of them. And that makes it even much harder for the Kurds to get their liberty. Patriotic Union. Excuse me, I don't think so, never. Not even among the Kurds from the different regions. I mean, the Kurds, the KDP and PKK were face to face against each other, but even that, especially after the ISIS came in, the Kurds have never been so united. And so we are very certain that the Kurds of anywhere will never have, they were usually used by different factions, different regional powers to have them, you know, to divide and have them fight each other. But that's definitely in the past and will not be back in the future. That's how every Kurd feels, that how every even Kurdish politician and the leaders think, and they're determined to keep it that way. So I don't see that happening again. Please, Don. Certainly the Kurds, I would say, and anybody would say, and especially the Kurds' enemies would say too, and they're angry at us for it, is that they're the closest allies to the United States in the entire region. And also, it's the only place perhaps in the entire region that where the Americans are welcomed. Even during the war, they were welcomed with flowers. Now we have kids 10, 15 years old that are named Bush. Boys, of course, not girls. I don't know, I haven't been to many third world countries or other countries I have not seen, but even the 4th of July, the American Independence Day, celebrated there with fireworks, and so that's how much they're attached. But at the same time, you know, any Kurd would tell you, and any political analyst would also tell you, that the Kurds have been betrayed a few times, and they're always on their guard, and they're always worried. Just what happened 3 days ago, when there was a conference set in London over ISIS, and the Kurds were not invited to it. The fact that Kurds are the main players, they're fighting on behalf of the whole world, and they're the only ones who are actually standing to and fighting the ISIS. And they were, so that sometimes they get a little bit worried that they've been used one more time, and when they're done with. But we believe that it's beyond that now, because Kurdistan, KRG, is being developed to the point where there's no return. And even Mr. Obama said that attacking Erbil, the capital of KRG, would be a red line for us. So it's at that level now, and we think we can only go forward from here. Kurdistan Regional Government. It's basically a de facto state, and it has been for the past 10 years. And this began, they started their first parliament back in 1992, right after a portion of the Kurdistan region was turned into a no-fly zone, a safe haven by the United States, where they were protected from Saddam. So they started forming their government. And there were many speed bumps along the way, one of which Mr. Crocker mentioned, as there was an infight. But come 2003 and the liberation of Iraq, and the Kurds just prospered, and now the infrastructure has been built, and even many of the hundreds of the villages that were completely destroyed, level to the ground, have been rebuilt. And fortunately, I could not use any of the rebuilt villages because they're modern. They did not look like the villages that they used to be. So we had to hunt for a few villages that were still authentic. And now we have tens of universities and colleges and over 35 satellite TV stations and a great many publications, and all the minorities have schools in their own language, being the Assyrians or the Armenians and the Turkmens, and even the Arabs have their own school now. And the English language is pretty much becoming the second language after Kurdish and the school system. And it's really prospering very well, and we have many foreigners from all the way from Australia to Japan to the United States to China to most European countries and the regional countries that are there doing business, doing contracts. So it's a happening place, as they say. Please. Okay. Go ahead. Yes. I am, yes. About 1,000,000%, and I'm not exaggerating. Well, there was a dictator, a monster who was committed genocide against the Kurds, and what you saw in the film that says 4,000 so many villages were destroyed, and over 300,000 people were thrown alive in mass graves, and then the chemical attacks, and anybody who would come and get rid of that regime was a welcome thing, and no one in the world even, no one cared. And so when the United States came and led the way and did what they did, of course, it's liberated not only the Kurds, but the other 60% of the Iraqi population that was also being oppressed, which are the Shias. Unfortunately, regretfully, the Shias have revenge in mind. The Kurds do not have that revenge in mind. They want to, even now, they're still trying to coordinate things with Baghdad and forget and forgive. And because that's the only way to bring a stop to the bloodshed, otherwise it will continue to eternity. So yes, to answer your question, it was the best thing, the greatest thing. It's history in the making for the Kurds, and therefore we have children named Bush. So that's the Kurdish perspective. Yes. Please. That's what I always ask that question as well. And as you know, violence against women and trafficking of women throughout the world, it's an epidemic throughout the world. And in many of the countries, what happened in Africa with Boko Haram, where they killed so many women. And as we speak, over 2,000 Yazidi and Christian women are now still in captivity, and they've been sold over and over again. Just last week, I read in the news, actually 3 days ago, 10 women, Arab women, in Mosul, a city that's captured by ISIS, were stoned to death because they refused a temporary marriage. And there's a temporary marriage, could be for 10 minutes or for 10 days, and they refused it, and so they were killed. Why they do this to the woman, it goes in the passage in the Quran about the Anfal. It's called the Anfal, and that's where the word Anfal, genocide, comes, where it says to kill, destroy the infidel, and to take their women as your possession as well as their properties. And that our first Anfal happened, it's in the Kurdish history, was back during the 7th century, namely one of the caliphs named Umar bin Khattab, that did reportedly beheaded over 40,000 people in Kurdistan. That's when the Kurds were turned into Islam. And and then Saddam did an Anfal, and Saddam convinced the Arab world that the Kurds deserve the Anfal because they're infidels, because they are teaming with the West, with America and Israel. And now the ISIS are doing this very Anfal genocide on anyone who's not Arab and who's not Muslim. So basically, it's in that psyche. And can you put logic into it, rationalize it? No, you cannot. It's just what's happening. It's a reality on the ground. Well, okay. You go ahead, and then you go ahead. Okay. When this happened in the 80s, and because of the mold of the society and moral issues, everyone was hush-hush about the aspect of having the Kurdish women taken and sold. So not much was said about it, but there are documents from the Iraqi government that even have the list of all the ones that were sold to households in the Gulf countries. And then apparently many ended up in brothels in Egypt and other places. And no one has ever made a film about it. As I said, they were hush-hush about it, and I thought this was a story to be told. When I filmed this, ISIS did not exist. This, what's happening today, did not happen. But interestingly, we're showing the film now, and it's happening as we speak. Go ahead. You had a question, you said? Okay. You know, every gathering you go to, and people at all levels, from the, you know, the highest level to any level, and any tea house, cafe, any taxi you enter, the conversation come up, everybody has their own opinion. But basically, the street opinion is that, and some of it is very obvious, ISIS was created from money from the Gulf countries, from Saudi Arabia, especially Qatar. They were trained for over a year in Libya, and that fact is only recently being discovered. And Turkey has a hand in it, not because Turkey likes ISIS, but Turkey would prefer ISIS over the Kurds. And even yesterday, Erdogan said in a report, he was coming from Africa, coming back, and he said an autonomy for the Kurds in Syria is a red line for us. And therefore, they consider ISIS over the Kurds. So who has a hand in it? Apparently, many areas. Such a huge force does not just come of its own. And there are players in it. And at the same time, ironically, some of these same countries are now being used as a training ground for the Sunni tribes. And I believe the current administration would be given weapons to them, knowing that millions worth of weapons, highly sophisticated weapons that were in the hands of the Sunnis, easily just went in the hands of the ISIS. And even if 10%, 50%, or 20% of the weapons end up in the hands of the ISIS, because it's still, to me, it's a wrong thing. So people on the street, I'm talking from their perspective, now they would think, could America also have a hand in it? Why are they now arming the Sunnis, knowing the Sunnis are ISIS? Without them, the ISIS could not have existed or could not have become so strong. But on the more analytical side of the argument, I would say ISIS is a reaction to many other actions. Iraq had a hand in it, the Shia government in Iraq, that with the revenge methodology that actually abused and tried to even up with the Sunnis, and this is a reaction to it. But that for the past many years, the Sunnis have been calling and saying they have the Islamic Republic of Iraq. Not much attention was given to it because they were not taken seriously until the foreign elements came in. Mostly Chechenians and Tunisians are the core of the ISIS that are running the ISIS, in addition to many from the North African countries and from Yemen and other places. Personally, I'm not a politician. I'm not an expert in politics. But as a simple, humble person, I would say at the moment, as we speak, the policies of the United States are not the best. They could have done better. They could have even prevented ISIS, and had they not left Iraq, and hopefully some things will be corrected in the very near future. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your questions. Thank you, Mr. Matias.